I'd like you to open your hymnals to 283. We're not going to sing, but I'd like you to see this poem. 283. The poem starts out like this. God marked a line and told the sea its surging tides and waves were free to travel up the sloping strand, but not to overtake the land. Now, I know Tom Troger a little bit. I don't know that he knows me, but he teaches at Yale Divinity School, and every time I go up there for a conference, Troger is talking to the group in one way or another. Over the years, I've gotten to know his sharp mind and his great heart. And this has led me to feel pretty convinced that Troger would be the first one to say that this verse has been encountering some reverses on account of climate change over the last 30 years. He wrote that in 1986. This verse is kind of reversed, because if God ever marked a line and told the sea that it should not come beyond a certain place, well, go ask Sandy. Go ask Irene. Go ask Katrina whether the sea is paying any attention to any kind of word that was ever spoken to the seas. The surf is up in the worst way. And Tom Troger has a powerful poem here. We're going to get a little more acquainted with it today. But first of all, I want you to know that we're going to spend this Easter season taking serious account of the relationship between Christian faith and stewardship of the earth, because the earth is in trouble. And if our faith, if the encounter with the risen Lord, crucifixion, resurrection, has nothing to say about the climate changing and the warming of the earth, then frankly, such a religion is worthless. And the proof of it would be that the earth's going to keep on warming up and getting difficult. And if Christians cannot use their faith to deal with that difficulty, Christians will be ignored. This word needs our attention. We're not just going to deal with it on one Sunday. We're going to keep coming back. We're going to come back to it next week. We're going to come back 2 weeks from today. The world-renowned climate activist Bill McKibben will be in this pulpit preaching. We're going to come back again and again in different ways. We're not going to change the subject. You know, I think one way that the church has been complicit in the evils of society down through its 2 millennia, one way we've been complicit is when the burden of the Lord's requirement that we follow Him becomes too difficult, we just turn the page, read a different story, and move on with our faith. Or our religion, I should say, faithless, perhaps. We just change the subject. We're not going to change the subject. In fact, I don't know how we can ever change the subject, given what we've been learning about what's happening to this beloved earth. What has been happening? You read it in the New York Times, April 4, major story. In Peru, a glacier called the Cori, I wrote it down here, the Cori Calis Glacier in Peru, which delivers water to the people of Peru in the cities. Ice that took 1,600 years to build up in that glacier has melted away since 1980. Gone. Gone. In the southwest of our own nation, hydrologists report that the drought there in the Southwest has become permanent. The loss in crop yields every year is on the order of 40 million tons of barley, corn, and other food crops. In Antarctica, The Economist reports that the temperatures are rising faster than anywhere else on Earth. In fact, the decade of the 90s, it was rising fast. In the present decade, twice as fast, almost. Greenland, 1 trillion acres of ice has melted away from the sheet of Greenland, 10 times as much as the mass of Manhattan Island, melted away in a period of 5 years. Oh, things have changed. Bill McKibben says this about it. The planet on which our civilization evolved no longer exists. The stability that produced that civilization has vanished. Epic changes have begun. We may yet be able to maintain the planet to sustain some kind of civilization, but it won't be the same planet, and hence it cannot be the same kind of civilization. The Earth that we knew, the only Earth that we ever knew, is gone. Friends, I'm not going to load you up with any more statistics this morning, but I do want you to begin with that the Earth that we have known is gone. Something else is coming, and it needs a new civilization. Humans have caused this. Point number two. Rupert Murdoch, News Corp, Fox News, and the Koch brothers are all liars. They really are. They're all liars. This has been caused by human action. I couldn't believe my eyes reading one of McKibben's books when he shows that a gallon of gasoline contains the carbon from, I better get this right, 100 tons of ancient plant matter. 1 gallon of gasoline. I drive up to Albany and come back to see my brother, and I have put into the air 1 billion tons. It's hard to believe, 1 billion tons of the carbon that was in the plant matter of ancient times, hundreds of millions of years ago. Of course this is human caused. We opened up this wild magic juice, and the coal in the packages that we used to think were a cute little trick in the bottom of a Christmas stocking. And now we burst it open, and that carbon, what did we learn about in public schools, the law of conservation of matter, that carbon that was safely laid in the earth. It's not in the earth. Where is it? It didn't go away. It's in the air. The carbon dioxide, the levels of carbon dioxide have become so extreme in so many parts of the world, they are way beyond tolerable levels, and they are causing greenhouse effect and the warming of the planet. We have pushed Mother Earth to the limit. One sense you can get for how immense the Earth is this. Standard Oil was founded in 1870 by John D. Rockefeller. The money that Rockefeller earned, if the earned is the right word, I think there are better ones, from that work, also built great edifices through his son's work, including, of course, this extraordinary house of God. 1870, 100 years passed until the first Earth Day. 100 years, during which time we just kept burning billions and billions of gallons of oil and coal and gas, and nobody even noticed. It was in 1896 that a Swedish scientist named Arrhenius said, you know, there's going to be a greenhouse effect from breaking open this oil. But of course, we were like this for a very long time. That's how big the earth is, that we could pollute it that way for a century before anybody noticed. Well, there's three ways to approach not dealing with this that come to my mind. There may be several. One is to ignore it. Just ignore it. A lot of Americans are trying to ignore climate change. There's a name for ignoring things. It's called ignorance. That's all. Here's another one. People my age and a little older can say, hey, not my problem. I'm going to be gone before this makes my life any different from it is to speak of. I got my retirement coming, and I'm fine. Leave this problem to the young people. Oh, yeah, we created it, but let them deal with it. There's a name for that. Cowardice. Cowardice. Americans have been very cowardly. Now, there's another more pervasive way to handle this, and that is to feel fear, anxiety, and depression. In other words, to deny it, to pull away and just say, it's not the same as ignorance, because it's a real emotional reaction, but it's very painful. And we retract. There's a name for that. Faithlessness. Faith. Communities of faith can be one of the strong, strong movements to help us discover a new civilization in which we can live together, more together than we have been for 100 or more years. This is possible, but faith is required. Our Lord said, if you have faith, even as a mustard seed, you will say to the mountain of coal and gas and oil, be moved from this place, and it will move. If you have faith, anything you wish to do will become possible. People of faith must listen in hard as to the nature of God's call, this same call that Peter had to encounter there with his Lord. He said, you will be led where you do not want to go. Now, a third point I'd like to bring home. Climate change is not an issue. I hope you can hear me. We're going to come back to this idea next week again. Climate change is not an issue that you can compartmentalize and put over here and say, well, I hope somebody deals with it. Me, I'm going to be dealing with, and then you name something else. The fact is, the social injustices that we experience in this world are like the cracks in an egg. They're all interconnected so profoundly that we must become extraordinary in our building of coalitions where we understand what's really at stake and what's really happening that's causing all of this wide variety of injustices to burst forth. Look, consider the war on Iraq. Clearly a war for oil, no matter what they said. It was about oil, the demand of empire to have the energy and the control in order to continue to build up our oil. Fracking, what is that? We're going down into the foundations of the earth. Job was asked by his Lord, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Where were we when we started blowing up the foundations of the earth? Pouring down into the vaults beneath millions and millions of gallons of poisonous liquids, not knowing where they'll leak or what they'll do to the water sources. The reason we frack is the same reason we went to war. You follow me? That hole in the ocean, it was called a spill. When BP drilled a hole in the floor of the earth and it started to spout that oil, and we called it a spill. That wasn't a spill. That was damage done to the nature of the earth. Damage done to the nature of the earth. Here, right in this space, on April 4, 1967, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "The giant triplets of racism, materialism, and militarism, they're all connected to one attitude, that the rights of property are more important than people." Right here. That was the speech called Beyond Vietnam. He's saying there what I'm only riffing on. All of the injustices we face in this nation are related to the same drive for more stuff, more power. Look, racism and the bastard child of American slavery is itself an economic concept where the privileged are holding back the resources from people of color. That is what it is. It's an economic structuring, among other things. There are other evil fathers of racism, goodness knows, in addition to that. But it has that characteristic. Food justice. Council of the Riverside Church declared that a major priority. Consider, food justice is rooted partly in the destruction of the soils of America. Those soils are empty of nutrients today. They have been so larded with petrochemicals, there's nothing left in the soils of America's major farms except a substance to hold a plant upright. Everything else has to be poured in from oil. We are really stuck deep in the sins of our hoarding desire for more and more. And we could add more. We could add wage stagnation since the 1970s, the unjust and unaffordable health care system, the crumbling of our infrastructure, the education system for our children. All of these destructive elements are related to one another. What is that thing at core we're naming? It is this unregulated desire for more power, more wealth. It has been let to go free in an especially egregious way by the American spirit of capitalism. Capitalism unregulated, listen to me closely, capitalism unregulated is sin. The wages of sin is death. I myself would certainly say that I expect the powers of creativity, which are well protected in this nation in order to develop new ideas and bring them to markets. These are beautiful things, but there is no reason that they cannot be regulated. So capitalism that could be regulated properly by a functioning democracy would really begin to show up on Earth as a contribution. But we have taken Mother Earth to her limits, to the breaking point, frankly. And at this point, Mother Earth is pushing back. Mother Earth is far more powerful than we. When she hurts, she hurts back. And we're beginning to experience it now. In a book he published in 2009, I think it was, Bill McKibben concluded by saying that climate change is the ultimate failure of humanity. Now, I want to take that phrase and bring it inside the Christian tradition. Bill, by the way, attends church. He's told us the sermon title for 2 weeks from today. It's called God's Taunt. God's Taunt. Let's take that sentence. Climate change is the ultimate failure of humanity. What that means is, in Christian terms, it's the ultimate sin. It is our unwillingness to be regulated that has brought the world to this pass. And the poorest people of the earth are going to suffer the most, or the soonest, or both, from these devastating changes that are coming upon us. But I want to move now to a preaching of the gospel and to listen in to our scriptures today to help us. Because seeing that we have betrayed God's trust in us is not the worst of disasters. The worst of disasters is not seeing what we have done. Thomas Hobbes, hell, some of you know this phrase, hell is truth seen too late. That's the worst of disasters, seeing what we have done. Oh, this belongs to the heart of Christian faith. Our trust in our God so great that we can see and say what we have done and not deny it. This is powerful. And we have the story given to us with Peter, having come from three betrayals of his Lord by a charcoal fire. Isn't that interesting? John, who writes his story so many years after Luke's story, picks up the charcoal fire. But it's no longer night. But there's going to be three conversations between our Lord and Peter. And it's time that you and I definitively move the gospel story out of the museum shelf where it's grown kind of musty and bring it right inside ourselves. This is a story about you and me in our relationship with the risen Lord. The betrayer faces his Lord, and he says, Simon Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord. Feed my lambs. Simon Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, I already answered you. Tend my sheep. Simon Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord. Don't you doubt it? Feed my lambs. Friends, the revelation dream that John also, or another John, offered us has a great multitude coming out of the ordeal. The Church of Jesus Christ can be called alive in this time to draw the multitudes out of the ordeal that they may never hunger nor thirst anymore. And as the Revelator said, the sun shall not strike you nor any scorching heat. Now, there's some people going to go off and say that John knew all about global warming, and I don't go there. I just know that there's depth always to be found in these words that call us into our work. Riverside, you've been wandering in a long time transition. What fortitude you have needed since the times last seemed normal. It's been many years. You have done well. But like that night of betrayal leading to Holy Saturday, leading to the mysteries of Resurrection Sunday, like that period of time between Peter's betrayal and his running with excitement to the empty tomb, in that time, many people left the side of the Lord. They left. And Riverside has had an experience like that too. Many have left. Dr. Forbes asked a question last September, during sermons offered here at Space for Grace, are you a congregation or an aggregation? Well, there were hundreds in the room, and they're not there anymore. So I'm not sure what the answer was. But at the moment, people felt, we want to be a congregation. It's time for us once more to be an assembly. A congregation with a vision for what we can do in this nation and for this world. It's time to put away every kind of small-mindedness, whether it's between yourselves or yourselves thinking about the staff or the staff about each other or the staff about you. Everybody, stop! Stop! It's time for our mind to rise to the extraordinary moment in which we stand. In which we really can be about something essential for the whole world. In the coming weeks, there's two more. Every single day, invite somebody to come to church on April 28th. Can you do that? That'd be 14 invitations in a row. We should be 2,500 people in this room on April 28th as a symbol of our intention to be about something that matters across every kind of injustice, and that we understand that this is a call to the Spirit, for a spiritual community to dig deep into our fortitude, our given resources by the grace of God, that we can, like Peter, go where we did not want to go. We can follow you. We can do this together. So invite a different person every day for the next 2 weeks to come and hear what we're about as we are brought the word by Mr. Bill McKibben. In between here, we've ordered t-shirts, by the way, for anybody who wants to go out as a climate change Riverside evangelist. Put the t-shirt on, take some of our leaflets. They'll be ready at the end of this week. We'll have more information in e-news for you. Go out. Give the leaflets away. Come to Riverside. Come to Riverside, April 28. And now I want to say something about changes. We've changed these light bulbs. Congratulations to so many on staff and lay who worked for many, many months to bring about this green change. It's important. Changes in your home, recycling, these are important. None of these actions will solve the world's crisis. There's only one thing that can solve the world's crisis, and that is democracy in action. We have to become a people who can work together and think together, make coalitions together across all kinds of boundaries, coalitions where we are aiming to help the world into its next civilization. We're going to talk about the kind of civilization next week, not today. But that means laws and regulation and democracy are the way forward, not just for America, but all across this world. These are the needed deep, deep changes. And so faith and politics will come together in a way that Riverside has been famous for, but quiet about in recent years. And so there's an opportunity here to rise up and catch a vision for a way to be deepening our spiritual self-understanding, our community self-understanding, and our relationship to the justices and the injustices of the world. Riverside has over $10 million invested in fossil fuels. You're going to hear Mr. McKibben arguing that colleges, universities, and other institutions must consider divestment. We must consider divestment. In fact, some say the share price of the fossil fuel companies is going to tumble as the movement of divestment gets going, because the world must act to save itself. And Riverside belongs in the van of this movement. The time is now. You have a way, an experience in the history of this church of being about things that matter. This is it. Let us come together to change this world into one that we can give gladly to our grandchildren. Amen.